Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Mem Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top of Daf Mem Zayin. The Gemara opens with a quote from the Mishnah dealing with the two litigants that were choshud on Shavuos, that are suspect of lying. The Mishnah says, Chazra Shavua Limakoma. The Shavua that, according to our Mishnah, was originally taken from the person who would have been expected to swear and be exempt from payment, was then, according to the Mishnah, transferred to the one trying to collect. But in the event that he, as well as the original party, are suspect, the expression appeared, Chazra Shavua Limakoma. The Gemara asks, Leheichon Chazra, when you say the Shavua is returned to its place, it goes back to where it originally was, what do you mean by that? So we have two approaches. Omar Rabbi Ami, Rabosenu Shebebovel Omru, Chazra Shavua Lesinai. The translation would be that the Shavua returns to Sinai, to the oath at Mount Sinai. And Rashi, third line from the top, says, L'shvuas har Sinai shehishbia kosh boros Yisrael, returns to Mount Sinai where the Almighty bound the Jews by oath, alo sigzol, not to steal. V'hu yifra min ha-kofir momen l'chavero, and the Almighty will take retribution from he who denies money owed to his friend. Avol based in Ainis Kokin, Lo Lushavua, Veloli Puron. And here we've dashed, underlined, this is the main point of this particular opinion, that the earthly courts do not get involved, not regarding imposing an oath, and not with regard to extracting payment. That is the first opinion that we see here, Chazra Shavua Lesinai. Rabosenu Sheberetz Yisrael, the Gemara continues, Omru, Chazra Shavua Lemechuyev La. The oath, expectation, or obligation goes back to the one who originally should have sworn. Now, we've mentioned this numerous times, that the court-imposed oath on a Torah level is an oath of exemption, where a person swears that to validate their claim of not owing what is being demanded of them. That's a vote. That's an oath of exemption. However, the main point is not in the words of the Gemara. We add, and since that person cannot swear because he's suspect of lying, so he has to pay. So the point of difference between Rabosenu Shebebovel and Rabosenu Shebeis Yisrael, Rabosenu Shebovel, the scholars of Babylonia, later the Gemara will say who specifically we're referring to, they hold no court involvement. Rabosenu Shebeis Yisrael, again, we'll see who that is, holds that the court enforces payment. Omar Rav Papa, Rabosenu Shebebovel is Rabu Shmuel. It's an expression that, or a title, that refers to the two great leaders of Babylonian Jewry, Rav and Bovel, Rav and Shmuel. And Rabosenu Shebeis Yisrael is a reference to Rebbe Abba. This is also found in Masechah Sanhedrin on Daf Yud Zayin Omid Beis. As we look on in the Gemara, you notice diamonds highlighting the expressions Rabosenu Shebeis Bovel and Rabosenu Shebeis Yisrael. Rav Shebebovel is a reference to Rav and Shmuel. What the Gemara will do now, you see a long point, demonstrate through the upcoming lines of Gemara that is exactly Shitas Rav and Shmuel. that when you have a situation that an oath cannot be taken, so the court does not get involved. Later, the next diamond that you see features Rabbi Seinu Sheberetz Yisrael, referring to Rabbi Abba, and we will eventually see after that long point, or is within that long point, that Rabbi Abba's approach to a situation where an oath cannot be taken, the option, the only other option is that that individual has to pay. And on the side of the Gemara, there are no say Mivneh heading. We also indicate this discussion goes to Omid Beis. The diamond is featured. Shtei Deyos, two opinions. Eich Lefarish Es HaMishnah, Shneem Choshudim Choshud Shvul Umekum, that where both are Choshud, so the oath goes back to its place. Rabbi Senu de Bovel, Rabbi Shmuel, Eino Mishalem. The result of their analysis, non-payment. And Rabbi Senu, Sheberetz Yisrael, which is Rabbi Abba, Mitoshen Yocheli Shava Mishalem. Since an oath can't be taken, so he has to pay. And as we said, we have two long points ahead of us. Now the Gemara. Rabbi Senu, the first diamond, Rabbi Senu Sheberetz Bovel, Rav Ushmuel Disnan. And what we are expecting to see is a reference to Rav and Shmuel holding no, when a Shvua cannot be taken, so there is no payment. Disnan. There's a Tanaic source which says, V'chein hayisoymim lo yifru elo b'shvua. This is a quote from a Mishnah earlier in the Perek, and it says, likewise, orphans do not collect unless there is a vow. Vavinon bo miman, from whom? In lemo milove, if you're talking about a case where orphans, namely, to the money was owed to their father, and they produce a shtar, a document, that money was owed, and they produce it to the lova, to the borrower himself. And the Mishnah says that they cannot collect unless they swear. We're talking then about the orphans of the malva, the heirs of the malva, cannot collect unless they swear. And they're holding a document. They're holding the bill of credit, that the bill of, say, the loan document. The Gemara says that can't be the pshat though in the Mishnah. Avuon shokil below shvua vinu b'shvua. If it was their father, the malva himself, the lender himself. He would have been able to collect without needing to swear. Now that it's his heirs are taking out, producing the shtar, they do have to swear. That can't be. Elo hachi komar. Rather, the explanation of the Mishnah is as follows: V'chein hayisoymim min hayisoymim lo yifru elo b'shvua. The original parties are both deceased. The lender and the borrower. And we have the children of each one confronting one another. So the children of the malva, of the lender, cannot collect from the children of the borrower unless there is an oath. For Rav Ushmuel Damitra Vayu, Lo Shonu Elo Shemes Malve Bechaye Love. The Mishnah that says that the orphans, the heirs of the lender, can in fact get payment by swearing, that's only under these circumstances, that the malva, the lender, died during the lifetime of the borrower. The alternative case, though, avomeis loive bechaye malve, if the borrower died first, leaving his orphan children, his heirs. the Malva was still alive. Now, at that point, if the Malva wanted to collect, he himself would have had to swear. When one collects from orphans, one cannot collect unless he swears. So here, you'd have a situation where the Malva himself would have had to swear. And as the Gemara says, Kvar nischayev Malva levnei loy v'shvua. The Malva himself was already bound to take an oath. And now upon his death, and his children want to collect their father's debt from the children of the borrower, there now we have a problem. V'ein odom moirish shvua labonov. Rashi elaborates on this. First we just translate. A person does not bequeath oath rights to his children. So that even though the Malva himself would have been able to swear that he didn't get paid yet and collect from the orphans, from the heirs of the borrower, that right is not passed to his, the lender's children. And now let's go over the Rashi to understand this better. And we have to also state the main point, and that is there is no shavua, there's also no payment. So that when you have a situation where a shavua cannot be made, the final result is there's simply no payment. This is taught by Rav and Shmuel, and this is what we said earlier. Rav Ami pointed out that the opinion of Rabbi Sena Shebebovel, which is Rav and Shmuel, that when an oath cannot be taken, like we had in our case of Shneim Chashuda, both are suspect of lying, no payment. Now the Rashi. We're looking at Rashi on the upper part of the narrow lines. Loi shonu de bishvua mihas yifru yasmi malve shotziu shtar al yasmi loive. The halacha of the Mishnah that Yisoimim can collect from Yisoimim upon their producing of a shtar, if they, the Yisoimim of the lender, swear, that's only when the Love died in the lifetime of the Malve. And as we said, the Malve, let me correct myself, that's only when the Malve died during the lifetime of the Love, which means that the heirs of the Malve with their shtar would have been able to collect following their father's ability to collect without having had to take an oath. Because the Love outlived the Malve. However, if the Love died in the lifetime of the Malve, Rashi goes on, Kvar nischayev Malve levnei loive shvua, demishah shemeis loive, ein lo lamalve lipar mene soimim ela b'shvua. At the point that the lender died, leaving the, at the point that the borrower died, leaving the lender alive, the lender himself would have had to swear. The principle is that you cannot collect from orphans unless you swear. The Ein Odom Moirish, Rashi says, Lebonov, Momon Shumuchuyev Olof Shvua, a person does not bequeath unto his children money that is accessed only through a shvua, only through an oath. Alma hoyel v'hu mechuyev shvua shelo iskabalti choyev zeh. The Malve, who was predeceased by the Love, he himself would have had to swear to collect from the Love's heirs, and the text of the oath is shelo iskabalti choyev zeh, I did not receive this debt, I didn't receive payment. V'yesoimim ein yecholim lishov akein, the yesoimim of the Malva can't swear that. Ela, all they would be able to swear is shelo pokadnu abo, father did not leave us with information, instructions concerning the debt that it has already been paid. In other words, all the heirs of the Malva would be able to swear is, father did not tell us that the debt was paid. V'ein zu hashvua hamuteles al aviem. That text, namely shelo pokadnu abo, was not the text that their father would have used. V'gam yas meloive ein yicholim lishova sheporo aviem. The heirs of the borrower, they can't swear that our father paid up the debt. Ka'omar Rav Shmuel shelo yifru. Under these circumstances, they're not going to pay. The heirs of the Lova will not pay. Alma, what do we see from here? Hamechuyev Shvua v'ein yicholim lishova lozeh v'lozeh, where there would be an expectation to swear, but neither side can swear. Svira l'Rav Shmuel chozro shvua l'sinai v'ein kan lo shvua v'lo piron. The oath goes back to Sinai, means it goes back to the Almighty, who says, I will take retribution from he who denies that which is rightfully owed to so-and-so. But as far as the court is concerned, there's no imposition of a shvua, nor is there any court extraction of payment. We now go back to the Gemara with presentation of the next opinion. Rabboseinu Sheberes Yisrael equals Rabbi Abba. Dahu Gavro Dechotaf Nasko Michavrei. And if this Gemara appears familiar to some of you, don't be surprised. We have seen this already in our Masechta. There was a case of someone who grabbed a bar of silver from his friend. Osula Kamei Rabbi Ami. The case was presented to Rabbi Ami, and Yosef Rabbi Abba Kameh, and Rabbi Yosei Rabbi Abba was seated there. Aisi chad sado demechtev chadfo minei. The one claiming the naska, the bar of silver, brought a witness that saw the offending party grab it, the naska, from him, from the claimer. Omar le, and the grabber says in Chatfi, yes, I did grab it. In other words, he doesn't contradict the witness. The Didi Chatfi just adds information. He says, that which I grabbed was really mine. Omar Rabbi Ami Hechi Lidainu Daini Lahaidina. How shall we as judges proceed? Name Olezil Shlim to tell the grabber, well, you've got to pay. Leko Trey Sadi. You don't have two witnesses that saw him grab. And in the absence of two witnesses, so we can't extract money from so-and-so. Niftarei! To say, well, you're exempt. Well, Iko Chatsala, but there is a single witness present that saw him grab. Neimo Leziel Ishtaba, to tell the grabber, well, swear to validate your claim. That cannot take place here either. Even though we know that one witness can generate the obligation of swearing on the part of that litigant that contradicts the testimony, nevertheless, we can't impose a shvua. Kevon di Omar, since the defendant is saying, Michtav Chatfi, he's saying, just like the single witness, he's saying, yes, I grabbed. Have le kigazlon. He is then in a legal position like that of a thief. In other words, we're not saying he's a thief, but just like a thief is someone that cannot swear, so to someone who in effect agrees with the testimony of the single witness. And we speak about a single witness testifying testimony against one of the litigants. An oath is imposed by the Torah. An oath is imposed on that litigant, provided or only if the text of the oath is one that contradicts the information the witness is providing. In this case, he wouldn't be contradicting the witness. The witness says, I saw him grab, and the defendant says, yes, I did grab. Just adds information. I grabbed my own thing. So an oath cannot be imposed. And the Gemara parallels it to a goslin, meaning just like a thief can't swear, this guy can't swear either. Omar le Rabbi Abba. Have mechu yeshua ve'en yochel lishova. Now Rabbi Abba, whose name we dashed underline because he's really the center of our attention, well, he says that you have a case of someone who's obligated to swear because he is being challenged by a singular witness, but he can't swear. People who are obligated to swear, but for technical reasons they can't swear, mishalem. So the grabber will have to pay or return the naska. So what do we see at this point? We had a long point, and we see that Rabbi Abba holds that in a situation where an oath cannot be taken, the alternative is that he has to pay. Omar Rava Kavose de Rabbi Abba Mistabra. Note, by the way, that again, we have a long point. This will take us till the fourth line from the top of Amud Beis. And by the way, if you don't have any marked Gemara, one can access my marked Gemaras by contacting gmarkings@gmail.com. So Rava says, Kavose de Rabbi Abba Mistabra. Rabbi Abba's approach is more likely, or more logical. The Tony Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami presents a Tanaic source. It says, Shvuas Hashem Tiyah Bein Shneem, Velo Bein Hayorshim. The Pasuk, it says that a Shvua shall be imposed between the two litigants, but not upon the heirs. Hechi Domi. What is the case? You have an heir of a lender saying that $100 owed to my father is in the hands of your father. The Omar lay, and the heir of the borrower says, Chamishim is lay. Yes, my father owed 50. The chamishin less lay. The other 50, no. So then the Gemara asks, Ma li hu, ma li avua. Why shouldn't the yoresh be able to swear when he is in fact issuing a claim of certainty? We have a mode b'mitzas on our hands. We have someone who is conceding or admitting to part of the debt. So if that's the case, why would the source rule that there's no shvua bein hayorshim? El olav di omale, it must be as follows. The case is, mono le'abo bi'adavicha, the child of the lender says that a mona as $100 owed to my father was in your father's hands. In other words, in simple terms, your father owed my father $100. Omar lei, the heir of the borrower says, Chamshin yadana v'chamshin lo yadana. 50 I know about. The other 50 I don't know. We continue on the top of Omid Beis. E Amr's Bishlama Oviv Ki Haigavno Michayev. If you say that the father of the borrower under these circumstances would be obligated to swear, but he won't be able to in actuality swear, because he would have been saying Eini Yodea, I don't know. In other words, a person says 50 I know, and the other 50 I don't know about. So then, in a case like that, the father who would have said that wouldn't be able to swear, but he would pay. Oh, so I need a pasuk to tell me, as the Gemara goes on to say, it's derech kro lemiftar gabi yorshim. I need a pasuk to tell me that the heir is exempt. Rashi at the top, Oviv ki hay gavna mechayev shvua, umito sheni yochol yishova to eino yodea komar lishalem. So he would have had to pay hainu the itzrif krolim ute lemiftar hayoresh betoyin tainazum. Therefore, I need a pasuk to exclude an heir who puts forward such a claim. So I need a pasuk to teach exemption. Eloi Amris Oviv ki ay gavna nami potter. But if you would say the father of this particular heir, in other words, the lender himself, the borrower himself, if you say the borrower himself, under circumstances like this, would have been exempt, like the approach Rav and Shmuel had taken. Kra gabi yorshin lomali. What do I need a pasuk to tell me about the exemption with regard to the heirs, when the borrower himself would have been exempt? So obviously his heirs would be exempt. So at this point, after completing this particular long point, Rava, quoting a Tanaic source, shows us that as a conclusion to a situation where someone who should swear but for technical reasons can't swear, the option is payment. And just to point out, on a technical level, we saw the exemption in this source on the Yorshim, but the father of these Yorshim, having said 50 I know about, the other 50 I don't know about, he, the father, would have had to pay. And that is the approach that Rabbi Abba had stated earlier, the Rabbi Seinu Sheberet Yisrael. We continue in the Gemara. V'Rav u'Shmuel hay shvuas Hashem mai darshi bei. We saw a Tanaic source, and we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text indicating to look back at Omid Aleph. You see that's a throwback to the Toni Rabbi Ami source. What do Rav and Shmuel do with this pasuk? We saw the Rabbi Ami source, which led us to a support for Rabbi Abba, but Rav and Shmuel, they argue with Rabbi Abba. So what do they do with that pasuk? My kodarshi bay. What do they learn from it? Answer, miboya le lichditanya. They need it for that which is contained in the following Tanaic source. You'll note on the side under the mivneh, the structural note, a triangle appears, sidra shel imros and droshos shel Shimon ben Tarfon. A series of droshes that are stated by Shimon ben Tarfon. The first of them cites this particular pasuk, and it's what he says that Rav and Shmuel would subscribe to. Shimon ben Tarfon oimer, shvuas Hashem tia ben shnehem, melamed shashvua chola al shnehem. That when a person is claiming payment, and he is claiming payment from someone else, and the other party is going to swear denying owing that payment, the onus of the shvua is upon both the one imposing the shvua and the one who's actually swearing. One of them is in a case where one is claiming and the other one is swearing, so someone here is not telling the truth. So it could be the toveya. The claimer is trying to collect something that is not due to him, and as a result of that, he's imposing a shvuah, he's forcing someone else for naught to swear to his innocence, when in fact the guy is innocent. So that act of putting forth essentially a false claim, causing someone else to swear in his own defense, the onus or the guilt, if you will, for causing him to swear for really no reason is upon the tovea, the one claiming. And naturally, if the one claiming is claiming an honest claim and the other party, the one being claimed from the actual swearer, swears falsely, obviously he is to be punished. So both the Tovea and the Nitba, the one claiming and the one being claimed from, are subject to the punishment that is generated by a Shvua. Number two, Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, Azhor le'oikev achar noyef minayin. This is a warning against someone who delivers women to function in harlotry to someone who actually engages in this immoral intimacy. So the Azhara, it's a warning to the one who provides the women for the individual, is the source for this offense being a negative command. Talmud Lomar, Lo Sinaf, the Pasuk itself says do not engage in forbidden intimacy. Lo Sanif, the Torah doesn't have vowels, and therefore the same word, Tinaf, can be read Tanif. Tanif is causative, to cause. Do not be the cause of someone engaging in forbidden intimacy. Another drasha of Shimon ben Tarfon, Pasuk says, V'teirognu bo'aleichem. Shimon ben Tarfon Oimer. This is a Pasuk that is a reaction to the sin of the the spies that scouted the land of Israel in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the word Vateirognu is explained as a contraction or as an abbreviation. Tartem, you scouted the land, V'ginisem ba'aloi shel mokom, and you spoke ill. The word ginisem, the word gnai, negative. You besmirched the Almighty that dwells in his tent amongst us. So that's v'teirognu ba'aleichem. You, after scouting the land, you then, with your negative message, your negative report, you besmirched the Almighty. The Pasuk says, the fourth drasha, Ad hanor hagodol nahar pras. The Pasuk is describing the, we'll call the biblical boundaries of the land of Israel. And it describes the Pras River, some translate it as the Euphrates River, as the Pasuk describes it as the great river, the big river. The Torah reveals to us this river much earlier as one of the four rivers that extended from the Garden of Eden, from Gan Eden. And the Pras is referred to as the fourth of the rivers. So that would show us that relative to other rivers, it's a small river. So how is it that here in Sefer Dvarim, that river, which was the fourth in size, is described as the great one, indicating the largest river? Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, Korev Legabi Dahino Veidhan. First we'll translate and then explain the analogy. One who draws near, who rubs upon or touches someone who is smeared with oil, he himself gets oil upon him. That's an analogy. But what this Pasuk Adanoha Godonar Pras is describing, we mentioned, it's giving you the boundaries of the land of Israel. So since Nahar Pras figures in the context of the land of Israel, that imparts greatness to a river that outside of that context wouldn't be considered a very great river. But since it serves as a boundary of the land of Israel, and the land of Israel is a very important central element in the Torah, So the river gains importance because it's attached to Israel. Just like someone who attaches himself to someone who's smeared with oil will also get the benefit of having the oil anointment. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, Eved Melech Kemelech. A second analogy to this idea of why the Nahar Pras is called the Great River, just like the slave of a king has importance because he is in service of the king, so that a slave of a king is like a king. V'achenvoni al pinkoso, we saw this as another example in the Mishnah of an oath to collect. On the side, we have a nosei topic heading, chenvoni al pinkoso, biru shitas Rebbe. We want to focus in and clarify the opinion of Rebbe. Haim hu maskim, will he agree shishneim, hasochir v'achenvoni nishboim v'noitlim mibalabayas. In following the Mishnah, which spoke about an employer that asked a store owner to lay out the funds for paying his workers, paying this Balabos's workers, and the store owner claims he laid out the money, and the workers claim they didn't receive the money. So we saw an approach that they swear and both collect from the Balabayas. In the Mishnah, we saw Ben Nanos disagree with that. Let's continue now in the Gemara. Tanya, Omar Rebbe, Torah Shvua Zu Loma. Rashi, Torah Shvua Zu Loma, Shishneim Boyim Lebezdin, both the Chenvoni, and the poyalim, the store owner who is going to lay out the wages, and the workers both come to basin, shetetzi shvuas shav mi benem, and one of them is definitely lying. Velo piresh Rebbe mai svirole. Rebbe in this Tanaic source complains about that, but he doesn't spell out what he holds. E noitlin belo shvua kebenanos, is money taken from the balabos to pay the respective parties, like Ben Nanos in the Mishnah, oy yafsid chenvoni b'shuas poyolim, or do the workers alone swear that they didn't get paid, and the chenvoni will end up losing through that? So Rebbe simply says, as we see in this source, Torah Shvua Zulama. Amar Le Rebbe Chiya. Rebbe Chiya says to Rebbe, Tanina, you have taught us Shneim Nishboim V'noitlin Mibal Habayas. You have taught that in fact both parties swear. The store owner, that he laid out the wages, the workers that they didn't receive, and they both collect from the Balabayas. So the Gemara now asks, Kiblo mine o lo kiblo mine? Did Rebbe accept Rebbe Chiya's point and then reverse his statement of Torah Shvua Zulama, or does Rebbe not accept that? Toshma. Let's glance at Rashi. A few lines down from here. Toshma, ki porish Rebbe, my svirule begavo. Ko'omar poalim nishvoim lechenvoni shelo kiblu mimenu klum. Rebbe explains, we will see an explanation in a brisa in the Gemara, that the workers swear to the store owner, to the chenvoni, that they didn't get anything from him. Amo lo kiblo usviru lechenvoni yafsid shoyo lo iloseis lohem bi'edim. And Rebbe's opinion then becomes clear, that the store owner will have to pay the workers. In other words, he loses out according to his own stand that he did pay already. And why does he lose out? Because he should have paid in front of witnesses. And since he didn't do that, so now that they're claiming they didn't get paid and swear to that effect, the store owner will have to pay them again. the Gemara. Toshma, Desanya, Rabbi Omer, Poyolim, Nishboim, Lechenvoni. The workers swear to the store owner that they didn't get their wages from him. Ve'im Isa, if Rabbi Chia's point was accepted by Rabbi, then the brisa we just read involving the workers swearing, Labala Bias mi boyale. Rabbi Chia's point would have been taken, if it would have been accepted, then Rebbe would have said that the workers swear not to the store owner, but they swear to the Balabayas that they didn't receive their wages. Omar Rava. Rava rejects the conclusion we just reached and says that Rebbe did accept Rabbi Chia's point, and as far as the source is concerned, Poyalim Nishboyen Lebalabayas B'maymed Chenvoni. The workers swear to the original employer, like Rabbi Chia said, and the oath is done in the presence of the store owner. Ki hechi delichsefu minei, so that they shall experience a sense of embarrassment from him if in fact they did receive the money from that chenvoni. But the oath is directed at the employer, as Rabbi Chia had claimed to Rabbi. Before we go further in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading. Shnei kite edim, hamachisha zu azu, two sets of witnesses that contradict one another. Ma dinom lohaid kol kat benifrad bi'edus acheres. Each set of witnesses, can they serve as witnesses in a separate case? Just to think about what we just said, realize you have two sets of witnesses that are contradicting each other. One set is lying. Can these guys, the two sets, serve as witnesses in some unrelated case? Rav Huna, Ksherim, Lohayid, Ve'edus Achaz Kuntur. Rav Huna, yes, they can. Rav Chista does not agree. Shnei Hakitos, Psulos, Ve'edus Achaz. As far as Rav Chista is concerned, these two sets are rendered unfit. HaGemora Mevi'a, Arba Mikrim Shel Malvin Veloivin Shechasumim Edim Elu Kokat Benifrad Al Shtorosam. The Gemara will present four cases with lenders and borrowers with these witnesses signing separately. Each set of witnesses signing separately on documents. We'll appreciate that a little more when we get into the actual cases. The Gemara. Itmar shnei kitei edim hamachishes zu azu, two sets of witnesses that contradict one another in their testimony. Omer Rav Huna, zu ba'a b'fnei atzma u'me'ida, v'zu ba'a b'fnei atzma u'me'ida. This set of witnesses can come on their own in another case and offer testimony, we'll accept them, and the other set as well can come forward to offer testimony in some other case. Rashi adds, but what Rav Huna will agree cannot be accepted is if one individual from set 1 and one individual from set 2 were to join together. You have two men, one of them is definitely a liar. So they cannot serve as a unit of testimony. However, the sets per se, where one of them is lying, we don't know which one, they can function as separate witnesses in some unrelated case. Rav Chista Omar, Bahadi Sadi Shakri Lomali. What reason should I have to deal whatsoever with witnesses that two of whom I know are liars. I just don't know which two they are. I don't want to see these guys in any other case, even separately. The Gemara continues with, as we said before, four cases. We've underlined the headings. Shnei Malvin Ushnei Loivin Ushnei Shtoros. Two separate lenders who each one lent to two separate borrowers respectively. Each case has its own, each loan has its own shtar, its own contract or bill of debt. Set one of witnesses signed one loan, and the other set of witnesses signed the other loan. Are these shtoros good? Are they valid? Are these valid bills of collection? So the Gemara says, "Hainu pluktayu." This would be the machlokus between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda. According to Rav Huna, the shtoros are valid because you're dealing with separate testimonies, and Rav Chisda would say no. When you look at the two shtoros, you've got two sets of witnesses that we know on a previous occasion, we know they had contradicted one another. We throw them out altogether, says Rav Chisda. Another case. Malve v'loive u'shnei shtoros. One person gave two separate loans to the same borrower. Now, each loan has a separate shtar, has a separate document. So on document one, set one of witnesses signed, and on document two, set number two of witnesses signed. These are the two sets of witnesses that we know had earlier in a previous testimony contradicted one another. Here they appear separating, signing two separate shtoros. So we have a malve that's trying to collect, let's just say the first loan was a loan of $200 and the second loan was a loan of $100. And this malve would like to collect $300. $200 and $100. Can he do that? Well, in order to collect $300, he would have to be, let's say, employing both sets of witnesses. One set of which we know is definitely lying. How much is the lender entitled to collect? So the Gemara says, Yad Baal Ashtar Al Atachtona. Baal Ashtar is the owner of the bills of collection, the lender. He is al hatachtona. He's got the weaker position. So that how much will have to be paid in actuality? We have two loans, one for $200, the other for $100. The lender will be able to collect only $100. The borrower is going to say, one of these two shtaros is signed by liars. So I'm not gonna pay you the larger amount. I'll pay you the smaller amount. Whether the honest witnesses signed that shtar or not doesn't matter. Either it's the $100 loan is signed by honest witnesses, and if it's the $200 loan signed by the honest witnesses, well, $100 is half of that debt. So $100, the lender, the borrower, will have to pay out, but not any more than that. Shnei malvin v'loive echad u'shnei shtoros. We have two lenders. Two people loaned to one borrower. And each loan had a separate shtar. How do we rule regarding this? So the Gemara says very briefly, Hainu Masnisen, this is the same as our Mishnah. How do we draw the parallel? So the two lenders would be parallel to the Chenvoni in our Mishnah. the chenvoni, the store owner, he was the one expected to lay out the money. The schirim, the workers, they are coming to the workers are coming to collect from the balabayas. And we also look at Rashi. Shnei malvin veloiva echad, haynu masnisen. Shnei malvin hotziu ishtoro aloiva echad. The echad mishtei kitos halalu achas chasuma boze viachas boze. Lo komi bayalon my koma ravuna ba. We wouldn't ask Ravuna, what do you hold over here? The haynu masnisen. This is straightforward, parallel to the Mishnah. What did it say in the Mishnah? Dekotoni nishboyin v'notlin mibalabayas. We have two malvin here. There are two people claiming money. In that Mishnah also we have the chenvoni claiming money, claiming that he had laid out money on behalf of the balabayas. We have the workers claiming money, that money is owed for their services. Even though in the Mishnah we know one of them is lying, either the chenvoni or the workers, we can't force a loss on either one of them. And Bezin moves in to the picture and collects from the balabayas to pay the chenvoni and to pay the poyalim. V'hachi nami l'Rav Huna. Likewise, with regard to Rav Huna, the islay gabi shnei malvin u'shnei loivin ze bo miida v'zu bo miida. Just like Rav Huna said, when you have the two contradictory witnesses, but each set can function in a separate case. Hu adin l'shnei malvin v'loiv echad. Just like in the case of two lenders and two borrowers, likewise with two lenders and one borrower. Even though this unfortunate borrower who is being sought for payment from two shtaros, one of which is a false shtar because of unacceptable witnesses on it, you can't nevertheless cause one of the lenders to lose out. You don't know which one is possible. So Rav Huna would have to rule. Rav Huna, who did not throw them out altogether in other cases of testimony, just like we saw in the Mishnah, the two people claiming money both got their money, so too when you have two malvin and one lova, the two malvin are entitled to receive payment. Let's continue in the Gemara. Shnei loivin umalve echad u'shnei shtoros mai. You have two borrowers. Both people borrowed from one lender. And they're two separate. This lender received documents of debt. In other words, bills of collection signed by those two sets of witnesses. Each set signed a separate loan document. What would Rav Huna say over here? You've got one malveh, one lender. Now, one of the two shtaros is definitely false. Can he collect from the two separate borrowers? So the Gemara says about this, Teku doesn't offer a response. The Rashi elaborates, showing us what's the murkiness, what's the point of doubt over here. The Rashi, Shnei lovenu malve echad, hoitzi malve ze shnei shtoro zuchasum boze, one lender produces two separate shtaros signed by these two separate sets of witnesses. Mayom Rav Huna bozeh. What would Rav Huna say about this? Rav Huna, again, is the opinion that did not reject them altogether. rather said that they can function in separate cases. So what would Rav Huna say here? Mi amrinon kevod dechad gavro the maisilu the kamon. Since it's one man, that malva, the one lender, brings both sets of witnesses in these in these shtaros. He's essentially bringing them together. Oh, lo mizdak kekinon lei. We don't deal with him. The monav shach b'shtar posel bo lefoneinu. Either way you look at things, this malva is holding one of the two stars as a false star. Zed doichel eitzel ze v'ze eitzel ze v'yafsid. And therefore each loan, there were two borrowers, each one maybe can say, listen, the loan that you're trying to collect from me, those are posel guys. And when he tries to collect from the other borrower, he'll say the same thing. Oy dilma, kevon de'al shnei loven hu motzi. Since the malva is approaching two separate borrowers, zu ba'a umi'ida, v'zu ba'a umi'ida. Set one of witnesses comes and testifies about the loan made to borrower one. Set two of witnesses comes as a separate entity to testify about the loan owed from borrower number two. And they're coming there as two separate testimonies, and that, as far as Rav Huna is concerned, is legitimate. The Rav Chista lo mi boyalei, as far as Rav Chista is concerned, there's no discussion here. To afilu b'shnei mavon, b'shnei lovon, b'shnei shtoros, posel. Even in the case which seemed the most obvious as a chance to, yes, collect, he, Rav Chista, would have rejected any collection because these two witnesses are rejected as serving as testimony in any case. The kol shekein b'shnei lovon u'malvechon, and all the more so if these four men, two sets of witnesses, would have signed bills of collection of one malve, trying to collect from two borrowers. Let's continue in the Gemara. Mosiv Rav Huna Bar Yehuda. A question appears. It's a long question. A question that's, we'll see, is raised against Rav Chista. Mosiv Rav Huna Bar Yehuda. We continue at the top of the Mem Ches. The source that is presented here deals with witnesses that come to testify about the new moon, the new phase of the moon, which introduces the new month. In the time of the Mishnah, witnesses would come to court and testify about the appearance of the moon. This is a period of time before the calendar was instituted, the fixed calendar was instituted. The beginning of a new month would be established by the testimony of two witnesses saying that they saw the new phase. However, when the witnesses testify, they offer a certain amount of detail regarding the positioning of the moon and its height above the horizon. So you have the following story. Echad oimer gavoah shtei mardeos. One witness says it was two mardeos. A mardas is an ox goad. It's a long stick with a nail at the end. It's an item that, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, had a standard height, a standard length to it. And one witness is saying that the moon was seen two mardeos above the horizon. And ve'echad omer shalosh, and the other one says three. Eidusan kayemes, a discrepancy between two and three is within the realm of reasonable human error, and in effect they were talking about the same thing. So you have two witnesses agreeing to the position of the moon, fine. So you have their testimony can be used then to establish the new month. Echad omer gimel ve'echad omer hey. One witness says it was three mardeos above the horizon, the other one says five. That's a very big discrepancy in their testimony. Botla, their testimony is not accepted. Umitstarfin li'edus acheres. My love, li'edus mamon. The mitstarfin li'edus acheres translated would mean that they can join up to serve as witnesses in another case, in an unrelated case. What do we mean by edus acheres? So the Gemara assumes a case of testimony concerning a money matter. Well, what would Rav Chisda have said about these two guys, one of whom is a liar? Rav Chisda would have thrown them out altogether. You can't testify anymore. And yet, in this Taneig source, we see they're mitzdarf leidus acheres. Rashi on the third line from the top, my love, mitzdarfen li'edus moment, kol echod mehen kosher, lohoid im eid acher bi'edus momon. Each one of these witnesses could join up with a third party to testify in some monetary case. Even though we know one of these two guys is ineligible, he's unfit. The kashel of chista, the fact that the source accepts them to testify in each one separately in a joining up with a second witness, called a third party in some separate case, that's a problem for a chista. The Gemara continues. Omar Rava. Rava explains what this source meant when it says mitzdarf leis acheres. It's as follows. It's not like we just explained, but it's something else. Who v'echad mitzdarfen li'edus acheres shel roish chodesh? Remember, we had one witness saying it was three mardeos, and the other one saying five. So at this point, we have contradictory testimony. However, imagine a third person would come in and say like one of those two opinions. A third witness would come and say, I also saw it three mardeos above the horizon. Oh, so now what do you have? You've got two against one. Dehava lehu trei v'chad. You have two witnesses saying it was three, and only one witness saying five. The ein dvarav shel echad b'mokem shnayim. The words of one are voided, are rejected in the presence of two that say otherwise. Now we look at the Rashi. Omar Rava, hachi ka'omar. Echad me'elu, one of these two contradictory witnesses, mitzdarif im eid acher im yoimar kemoise be'ediz zeh, can join up, one of these two can join up with a third party that would be saying like one of these two originals. V'hainu eidus acheres, what is that? And what do we mean by that expression, eidus acheres? Shenas is kas zu ha-mitzdarefes eidus acheres li'atzmo b'chodesh zeh. When the third party came in, so he, with the one original, one of the two originals, creates a new unit of testimony, a new group of testimony regarding this very month, the Gloi Milsa de Kushta Asid. By the fact that a third witness comes and says like one of these two originals, it shows that that guy, that original, was actually telling the truth. Sharei Zem Misayo. This third party who joins up with him helps him out. Vavile Trei V'chad. And now we've created a case of two versus one, and we accept the testimony of those two. But just to reiterate, as far as these two original guys that were contradicting each other, for them to serve as witnesses in some outside case, Rav Chisda would not accept them. Omar lechedvoni tainli bediner peros. This is a quote from the Mishnah that we saw back on Daf Mem Hey Omet Aleph, 14 lines from the top. There, the Mishnah said, Omar lechedvoni, a customer says to a grocer, tainli bediner peros, give me a diner worth of fruits. V'nosan lo, and the store owner gave it to him. Omar lo, tain li oso dinar. And then the store owner says, give me the money. Omar lo nasativ loch, and the customer says, well, I paid you already. V'nasate bunpili, and you put it in your special money wallet. So the Mishnah says, yishava bal habayis shenosan lo es hadinar. The customer has to swear that he paid the dinar. Let us now turn to our Gemara, Tanya. Omar Rebbe Yehuda, Amosai, when does the Balabayas, the customer, have to swear? Bizman Shaperos Tzvurun Umunochim, where the fruits are lying in the middle, so to speak. Tzvur means they're piled up and lying there. Shneim Urin Aleim. And both the Chenvoni and the Balabayas are arguing over them. The Balabayas claiming he paid, the Chenvoni saying that he didn't get paid. Aval hivshilon bekuposo lachorov, if the customer took the fruits and slung them over his back and went home, then hamotzi mechavera ovaraya, the chenvoni will not be able to get paid unless he can bring witnesses that payment was not made yet. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.